Have you ever had a vision you just had to fulfill? Well, that's exactly what happened with Dr. Joanne Cornwell. That vision was Sister Locks. Following her vision led to the creation of a natural hair management system that thousands of women could wear with pride and dignity. Join us as we take you to some familiar places and those that might surprise you. The Sister Locks podcast is where the story of your journey is told. Sponsored in part by Niche Agency. Afrocentric branding at yourniche.com.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another Sister Locks podcast. My name is Cassandra Lawson, and I am here with my beautiful co-host, Dr. Joanne Cornwell. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Cassandra. Thank you.
She is the founder and creator of Sister Locks, and I am very lucky to have her here with me today. Our topic is the Sister Locks National Training Program. What does it represent for Sister Locks and for the natural hair care industry?
That's right. It does represent something significant for the whole industry. I don't think most people think about it on that level.
Okay. Well, we will find out when we return. Don't go away.
Naturalistas, get the fullness of freedom with Sister Locks, your premier textured hair locking technique. Like hair, we've grown, celebrating 25 years of stylish versatility that makes natural living easy in a community of like minds. Let's share the Sister Locks lifestyle on our 2018 Freedom Tours coming to a city near you. So, feel the confidence of your kink when you come home to Sister Locks at sisterlocks.com.
Welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. Dr. C, most of our listeners are aware of the Sister Locks National Training Program, and it's easy for us to understand how that benefits Sister Locks. But what does that represent for the natural hair care industry as a whole?
Oh, man. Cassandra, I'm going to take you way back.
Okay, I'm ready.
Because we can't just start talking about the natural hair care industry. We have to talk about the black hair care industry, which really started during C.J. Walker's era, not just C.J. Walker, of course. There were several other women primarily who were successful in transforming what existed before into what could properly be called a beauty industry, hair care industry for African-American women, primarily women, though men were always involved in the early days especially. So back in the day, right, there was no black hair care industry. People who were my ancestors, my parents' ancestors, you know, who came over here on those boats and found themselves in situations where there was nothing for them, nothing. I mean, what did you do when you couldn't even wash your hair as often as you wanted to? When, if it got dry or it got lice in it, what did you do? What did you put in it? There are several books and tapes and things like that that were made about this topic. The one that comes to mind is 400 Years Without a Comb, which is Willie Morrow's book and video treatment of this topic. You know, people were putting things like, you know, axle grease on their hair and you know, just trying to devise ways of caring for their hair by using the things around them, which had nothing to do with, you know, there was a hair care industry, but it wasn't for black people. And prior to C.J. Walker, it was possible to be a beautician, but that meant that you were doing white people's hair. Mm-hmm. There was no beauty culture for black hair. So it was huge when around the time of C.J. Walker, which was, you know, the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, it was huge when they came up with things like, you know, specialized shampoos and specialized pomades and specialized procedures for addressing our hair. And when that happened, you talk about segregation was still in place. It was like the Iron Curtain. There was no you know, crossing over, you know, you use my products, I'll use yours. There was none of that. And so everything had to be built on from scratch. And then it had to be gotten from point A to point B, which meant that there was a need for a distribution network. And then people had to be taught how to use it, what to use and how to use it. And that's the educational component that eventually evolved into beauty colleges. And then that information had to be put into practice to make women, to give women access to this and to enhance the beauty and, you know, kind of acceptability of the average Black woman. And so that's where the salon side of it came. So the approach during that time in our cultural history was really holistic. It was beauty supply, it was manufacturing, it was distribution, it was education, it was salons. And so we have an excellent model for how to maintain control of the industry from A to Z. So that was like 1900 to 1920, 25, that era. Then you had the Depression and then post-Depression. And then, yeah, I know this sounds like a history lesson, but bear with me.
this is good information.
Yeah, listen, around the 30s, right, when people were thinking about getting our economy back together, you started having government intervention into how that was going to take place. So the government, federal government, started legislating the trades. And hair care got defined as a trade, as in cosmetology. And so this is how government regulations started creeping into, you know, who learns what, about what, and who gets to authenticate and certify somebody's level of understanding about all of this. It was at the same time a period when Black people in this country were trying to get away from slavery, segregation, and to become real Americans and to be treated like that. So there was a hunger on our part to be part of the mainstream. And because the government had control of this, we had that opportunity. We didn't have to go knock on the plantation door and say, can I do this? The government was more of a neutral party, not neutral by any means, but it was possible for African Americans to become part of that. So the rise of the cosmetology industry is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it was an amazing trade opportunity for African Americans to become a part, even though salons continue to be segregated and schools continue to be segregated, at least you could become what became known as a cosmetologist, and you could get that license, and you could become a professional. The downside of that was that you learned the cosmetology of straight hair. Never in the history of cosmetology was learning about African textured hair a part of the program. So we come into the 50s and 60s with this professional trade, you know, stamp of approval, but learning less and less, having fewer and fewer opportunities to really explore and expand and develop and invent things that relate to our own hair. So by the 60s, 70s, you know, you have this idea that natural hair is one thing. When the natural hair movement starts, mm-hmm. it's like in spite of the cosmetology industry. That's why we don't speak to each other today. We're still working on our relationship with cosmetology because that split happened. So what Sister Lox is trying to do, this is like the direct answer to your question now.
Drum roll.
So, you know, what Sister Lox is trying to do is to reintegrate hair care for Black women. I don't believe that a Black woman should have to make the choice between going to somebody who will only look at your hair in terms of how it needs to be altered or straightened or whatever, and then go to somebody totally different if they want to talk about natural. Mm-hmm. So we have a long way to go, but the intention is to take a holistic approach to hair care. We do natural hair care, but it makes sense to us to look at manufacturing, distribution, supply, right? Mm-hmm. Salons and education. So the national training program is part of that piece. Okay. Because even though I understand why hair care was regulated by governments and, you know, state legislatures and things like that, I don't feel it's appropriate. I don't feel the government agencies have the knowledge or the know-how, the interest to regulate hair care for anybody really, but specifically for African textured hair. I'm a much better professional for that. I have a better background. I have the direct experience. I have curriculum development expertise. I have contact and access to the demographic in question. I don't need to go to a state legislature to get certified to do something that I already know how to do and could teach them how to do, as a matter of fact. So I choose, and it's not just me, people in Sister Locks organization, we want to eventually control supply and distribution and manufacturing and salons.
Yes.
And all of that. So the training program allows people who have learned how to do sister locks, right, to move to different levels with different types of certification, and then turn around and offer a range of services with professionalism and with confidence to a public whose needs have not historically been addressed.
Mm-hmm. When I hear this... That was a mouthful, Doc.
Yes, it was.
I have officially been
schooled. Well, don't ask me if you don't want to know, okay? Because I'm trying to tell you, okay?
Well, that's good. I mean, you earned the title Hair Bandit.
I am. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm not sorry.
Don't be sorry because of you being a hair bandit, it allows for people like ourselves who now have careers and lives have been changed because of your system. So we appreciate that. And this discussion so far has made me realize that the Sister Locks business model is so much more than just doing business.
It really is, and it always has been. You know, we could have decided right in the very beginning to, you know, throw instructions in a box and sell Sister Locks off the shelf, you know, like perms are sold, and just get paid and not get involved with any of this cultural stuff. But that's not where we're coming from. You know, we are about, you know, making fundamental changes and evolving through the stages of being African people in the world. And I'm really proud of the way that we approach that.
Okay, Dr. C, let's break down this concrete day-to-day level. How many trainings does Sister Locks offer per year?
Well, I can answer that question, but as a way of kind of getting into that answer, I want to mention that we have a national training supervisor. That's Michelle Bryant. And she really, from year to year, she determines this. So this might be a good time to bring her on the line.
That's a great idea.
Okay.
Michelle has been a Sister Locks consultant since 1999. That's impressive since the business had only started in 1993. That only 6 years in, she was certified in 2000 and became a trainer in 2002 and national training supervisor in 2005.
Wow.
Michelle is on the line.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Aren't you tired of us yet, Michelle?
No, not even. We're just getting started.
Okay.
Well, she trained me in 2006.
Okay. Did she do a good job?
She did a very good job. It was my goal to be a mini Michelle.
Okay.
I haven't made it yet, but I'm on my way.
Okay.
So, Michelle, why do you think Sister Locks felt that a national training supervisor was necessary?
Wow. Well, I think at the time, Dr. Cornwell saw a need for, you know, more organization behind consultants and trainees so that there would be follow-up care and ongoing education and coaching to make the training more uniform.
Yeah.
Everybody be on the same page.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Michelle. You know, you don't know what you're getting into until you get into it. And so it's kind of like we graduated into that because of what was happening, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that she was a guinea pig?
Yeah. Yes, don't tell her.
Well, fortunate for me because it has been a wonderful journey, you know, to be involved at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Michelle, we had asked the question earlier, how many trainings does Sister Locks offer in a year?
Usually the schedule has about 35 to 40 trainings, and that's national and international locations, you know, all over.
How many international do we have now, Michelle? We go to Canada, France.
We go to Canada, France. We go to the UK.
The UK.
We have several spots in the Caribbean.
That's right, especially Jamaica.
Yeah. So we're out there now.
We're out there.
and requests come in all the time for us to come places. So, we need a minimum of
6 to 10 people. And a lot of times people are excited about the idea, but showing up's another thing.
And for international locations, we need a few more than that, I think.
Yeah.
In order to make it happen.
How does the number of classes compare to now from when you first started?
Back then, I think we had a few target locations, like major, cities that had a high population of people interested in our classes, like Atlanta, Baltimore, D.C., things like that. And then when those requests started coming in to have trainings in other places, it just worked out where we were able to find the people that were interested in the classes. And those classes, they fill up.
Who takes the Sister Locks training classes?
You know what? We don't discriminate. So what I mean by that is you might be a cosmetologist with some background, a natural hair care professional, maybe Sister Locks wearers, or people that are very interested in, have a passion for natural hair. So there's no experience necessary, and, we need every trainee where they are.
Yeah, and Michelle, I'm glad you make that point, because sometimes people do think that you have to have a hair care background, either as a natural stylist or a cosmetologist, and that's not the case at all.
Right. No, we really just want people to come in with, the desire to do Sister Locks, to learn it and do it correctly. It's the main thing.
I think sometimes when we come from the cosmetology background, we think that we know too much. Yeah. When I took the class, I sat up there and I was just like, I'm not using those Sister Locks products. But that was before you very kindly explained to me that the Sister Locks products were developed for a need and they're not just there to be there. So definitely when you take the training classes, you have to have an open mind to the concept, because it's a system and it's completely different and foreign to whatever else we've been in, whether it's cosmetology or natural hair. It's different.
Yeah, I do have something to say about that. And Michelle, I'm dying to hear what you have to say too. But our cosmetology sisters, bless their hearts.
They talking about me.
Yes. because it's such a complementary discipline to natural hair care, but it is not natural hair care. They did not learn anything, barring a couple of exceptions, about natural hair in cosmetology school. So cosmetology school does not prepare you for this technique necessarily. It gives you some wonderful complementary skills, like styling, like cutting, I'm not even sure how much customer care they focus on, but, it's not that it's not worth anything, but it is not a prerequisite for this at all. And time after time, our cosmetologists are just marveling at what they pick up in the class that they did not get to learn in some other environment. Sometimes cosmetologists who come with that attitude that they know this or that or the other thing, sometimes it can get in the way. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they are an asset once they understand that they want to pull from their background those things that support what we're saying and leave behind those things that don't. How do you feel about that, Michelle?
You're absolutely right. I came from the cosmetology field. You know, my background originally was as a braider, but in order to own a business, I needed a license in California back then. And what I discovered is there's not much taught about natural hair. Mm-hmm. In fact, instructors would want information from me.
Right. Yeah, they often take people who know how to braid and have them doing braided customers. Mm-hmm. But you can't take that skill into the cosmetology exam because they don't test on it.
Right. So when Sister Lux, when we're in training classes, I often tell cosmetologists, please, for the remainder of class, just be open. Mm-hmm. Leave cosmetology to the side. We'll pick up where those things complement what we do, like you said, styling, things like that. But for the most part, Sister Lux is such an all-inclusive natural hair care system. There's really no need to combine something else into this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to do it right.
Right. So, Michelle, how would you compare our training program with the training you received in cosmetology, or maybe some of the after being licensed, the classes that you took? How is that experience A to B?
Yeah, when I went to cosmetology, like I said, it was for the purposes of being legitimate with the license.
Okay.
I had always specialized in natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was in cosmetology, of course, you have to practice, you have to learn, you know, and provide the services that the school, you know, authorizes.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing taught about natural hair, other than to describe it as super curly hair, that you needed to alter the texture in order to, you know,
make it like straightener so that you could perform cosmetology on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, the main thing I would say that I take away from cosmetology is sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I use, you know, constantly. But everything else, the classes were not geared towards my specific interest.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really, I can't say I didn't benefit. It wasn't time lost, but it didn't prepare me for being a natural hair care specialist any more than I already, you know, what I already knew. So when I left cosmetology, I started specializing in natural hair and teaching people how to do their natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was something I didn't learn.
You know, I wanted to make a comment of something you said, Michelle, about learning sanitation in cosmetology. And even though we teach sanitation in the Sister Lux class, I can't stress enough how important it is to make that a part of your practice, no matter what type of hair care you provide. And I have to admit that natural hair care does have a bad rap with a lot of people when it comes to sanitation. And that is partly because people do home-based businesses for the most part, right? This is something that especially young people, but anybody can acquire some skills and start offering it to people in the neighborhood. I don't think that anybody that I know that was born Black and grew up at least part of their lives in a Black community isn't related to or live two doors down from somebody who knows how to braid hair.
Right.
And so it is so deeply integrated into our culture. It's not even funny. But that person doesn't necessarily have specific sanitation practices along with what they do. So we end up having, you know, we kind of are comfortable with, you know, not knowing where that comb came from that she may be using.
Sitting on the floor.
Yes.
And while it may have, you know, familiar and heartwarming memories to it, you know, it reminds us of our childhood and sisterhood and all of that, which is, you can't discount that. When you talk about offering professional services, what you don't want to do is just import those behaviors into your professional offerings.
Exactly.
And so it's a challenge for those that we train who do come from just a community background, which is pretty much most of us, to understand that when you're offering professional services, health and hygiene and sanitation have to be at the center of that. And I know you're strong on that as well.
Yes, because I do not want you coming at me with a comb that I didn't see where it came from. You know? So that's something that I really, really am happy that Sister Locke focuses on. And our trainees learn that from day one. You know, sanitation practices, proper sanitation is going to be integral to your Sister Locke business. You cannot skip that. You know, making the client comfortable, making sure your environment is safe and clean. It's just a must.
It's a must, yeah. I want to move to another question. You know, we have people who ask us questions about our training program all the time. And one that comes up is, well, does it matter if I get my training in Detroit, you know, Michigan, or what if I can only go to the class in Orlando, Florida? Is it the same training? You know, I won't have the same trainer, you know. What do you have to say to them about the different locations and different trainers that we have and the consistency of the program?
You know, I'm really proud of our training team because for the most part, everybody strives to teach by the book. So regardless to what location you choose to take the training class, you'll come away with the same quality training that you should get at any of our classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. That's one of the things that it's really fortunate that home office, you know, schedules the classes, determines who's teaching, and our trainers are trained.
Trained how to train.
We go through continuing education. We have meetings to update on, you know, different techniques and things that we want that will enhance our training. So I think consistency is a major part of the training.
Okay.
Definitely.
Now, once someone has, you know, taken the 4-day training class, what resources are available to them?
You know, that's a good question. And we continue to work on this, providing ongoing follow-up with trainees and consultants. Right now, we definitely have brought the information center up so that anyone who wants to find out about all things Sister Locke, they can go to that information center and click on a link that will guide them to the answers for their questions.
That's just from the home page, right? You can click on Info Center.
Yes. Sister Locke. And then the on SisterLocke.com, you go to the information center and everything is there, including a link for consultants and trainees that they can get into a section that is strictly for our professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Sister Locke Academy, which offers ongoing training, coaching opportunities, our certification program. There's just a lot of information and resources available to our consultants and trainees after they're trained.
Okay. I do have one more question for you, and this is something that comes from, you know, people on Facebook and other social media who are looking at our training program and then how our consultants behave after they're trained. And there's this culture among cosmetology trained professionals. Let's say you're working in a salon. Somebody wants to learn a technique. They'll go to a class and then they'll come back to the salon and then they'll just show everybody what they learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody, in a sense, gets to benefit from one person going to a class. We don't do that in Sister Locke, do we?
No.
No, not at all. Absolutely not.
So can you explain to the listeners why we don't do that?
Well, the main reason is, you know, hearsay is always diluted. I can't go to a class and come back and tell you the specifics of what I've learned in a way that you would get it if you took that class firsthand mm-hmm. for yourself. But we don't encourage that because it leads to things being changed, and Sister Locke is very specific.
Right.
You know, all of our details and just the way we do things and the why is explained in class. So if you don't get it there, you're not going to get what you need in order to be professional and knowledgeable about why you're doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
in cosmetology, you know, there are procedures and I can show you and you just mimic what I do. But even then, you still don't know why you're doing that. You mm-hmm. don't know what is involved as far as keeping the client's hair in its optimal condition. You don't know, you know, exactly what was taught in class. But you're just,
that's right, because with Sister Locks, we don't do everybody's hair the same way.
Right.
It has to be analyzed based on the criteria that we set. And then depending how it matches up, we do A approach or B approach or C approach.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are people, I mean, I know there are things that I see sometimes and I cringe because you can tell, you can usually tell when it's a person who is bootlegging mm-hmm. The system. You know, and we really discourage that because eventually the client finds out.
Yeah.
And they want to come to Sister Locke's home office and find out what they can do about it.
Right. We get the refugees all the time, don't we?
Exactly.
And
it's not bad.
It's not fair to the client because they think they're doing the research online. They're seeing all of these pictures, you know, of whoever who did their hair this way and it worked perfectly well. You know, they use a clothespin or something to do the locks.
Right.
And, you know, whatever they're doing. And they don't get the video 6 months later that where it says, you know, I wrecked my hair.
right. Well, you know what? I always say, and I encourage people to take the class, get the legitimate training and have that resource, you know, for ongoing care, because our clients deserve
Absolutely.
To have this done right. Mm-hmm. For people that are on this natural hair care journey, you know, by the time you get to Sister Locks, you've reached, you know, this level of consciousness and self-awareness and acceptance that you deserve the best going into this, you know. So we really do encourage to go to sisterlocks.com, find a listed consultant trainee, and go the route that they're taught. We have everything in place. You mm-hmm. you can find out on the website whether you should have a consultation. You should have sample locks. You know, your installation, your establishment should include a starter kit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are just basics that everyone pursuing Sister Locks should know that they're what they should have.
That's it. Yeah, the information's there.
It's there. And a bootlegger is not going to be able to provide that.
Yeah.
And can I just add another thing to be aware of? I always tell people, you know, if their name is not on the website, don't let them do their hair. I encourage my new clients, if someone refers someone to me, I tell them, why don't you go online and make sure that I am on the website? Because people are so creative with their excuses as to why they're not on the website. I've heard everything from injury to just outright, you know, I don't want to be a part of that cult. So it's just
uh-oh, they found out we're a cult.
Yes. So all those different things. So it's just really important that you know what you're getting and you know who is doing your hair.
Yeah. You know, because our women spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
I say thousands.
Hundreds of dollars for, you know, a month, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of money that we spend on our hair deserves, it's like we deserve to get something that we can rely upon when we spend that much money on our hair.
Yeah.
So.
And I want to say something else, too, about the products, because, you know, after finding someone to do your hair correctly, you want to make certain that you're maintaining the integrity of your locks.
Absolutely.
With the Sister Locks products.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I see these pictures of buildup. I see pictures of people that have all kinds of lacquer in their hair and waxes and you name it. And so they've taken a system that's foolproof and they've gotten their Sister Locks done correctly. And then they go out and put something that's not even formulated to, you know, to care for Sister Locks in their hair. And they ruin the best efforts to give them, you know, a healthy hair to Sister Locks.
So
the products are a huge part of what Sister Locks wearers should be educated about and have access to. And again, all they have to do is go on the website and they can order directly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Michelle, we just want to thank you for coming and being on this call and shedding some light on the Sister Locks training program.
Thank you so much too, Cassandra,
and thank you for everything that you do out there, Michelle. I'm very proud of our training program, and it's largely because of you out there cracking the whip. Really appreciate you.
thank you so much. Okay. I'm honored.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Right. Thank you, Michelle.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dr. C, how large is your training team currently?
I think we have about 16 to 18 active trainers at this time. And I think we started out with about six. I think the first class for trainers was about six people. And so we've, grown over the years slowly at first. And it really is a matter of demand, and because we have a lot of great consultants out there who are, as far as their individual development, they're ready to become trainers. So as the Sister Locks phenomenon grows, we'll have demand for more and more trainers. Another thing that we're going to be doing is making our courses more and more online based.
Okay.
So that part of the learning experience to become a Sister Locks consultant will be done online, and then we'll be able to spend more quality time with our trainers in the face-to-face. We actually started our training program as a one-day training.
Oh, wow.
And Cassandra, you know what this means because you know how much information there is in our course, which is now 4 days. But even at 4 days, our trainees don't get a whole lot of hands-on time. They could use twice as much hands-on time. And we're aware of that. So we're looking at moving to the next level as quickly as possible. It'd be great to be able to do that this year in our 25th year to get to the point where we can make our training program even better and put our consultants out there at a level where they have all the confidence they need to do Sister Locks the way we all know it should be done.
Yeah, that's good, because I know with the training classes, it could be a little bit overwhelming. All the all the information, we think it's going to be easy because we see our consultants every day.
Right. I've had people go through that training program and come back for a refresher and tell me, Dr. C, that wasn't in the thing before.
Are you talking about me?
It could have been, no, but I've heard that several times because there was just so much the first time, there was no way that they could retain it all.
I've been doing locks for 11 years, and I think I have officially attended 3 Sister Locks classes, but I've probably been like a bootleg trainer.
Trainee.
Probably for trainer at least five or six, just in the background, and every time I learn something new.
I have one last thing I want to say. We have not touched on this, and I just want to do this very quickly. We are creating career paths for people. People are, our women especially, are finding ways to quit their day jobs, to enhance their family income. And that is a big thing. And we become entrepreneurs. And so it's a big motivating factor. We don't do this just for fun. We do it because it's strengthening the economic base in our communities.
Yes, very, very true. I would like to thank our guest, Michelle Bryant, for sharing with us the ins and outs of the Sister Locks program. We have such a high standard for Sister Locks and our training. And Michelle is definitely the leader of that. She likes to dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Dr. Cornwell, you are the founder and the creator of Sister Locks, but Michelle Bryant is my personal guru because she taught me everything I know. So she has a special place in my heart. We'd like to thank everyone for tuning in with us. Please check us out at sisterlocks.com on Facebook and Instagram. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.